You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to 3CR Breakfast. Today's Tuesday, the 28th of April, 2026, and thank you to the Radioactive Show, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. My name is Fung, and in the studio today, we've got Fisa, Juliet, and Isol. Good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
Morning.
Just before we started the program, we were just Fisa, you asked me how Camp Sovereignty was on the weekend, and yeah, that was really beautiful. I attended the event that took place on the 25th, Saturday evening. It was great. It was hosted by Uncle Robbie Thorpe and also Yaren Cousins Bundle, but also there were speakers from, well, Tony Birch spoke and gave like a history of various, various events and stories of the horrors of colonization.
Yeah.
But also heard from some people from West Papua who were visiting, and also some women from Kanaki who were visiting as well.
Nice. Mm. Yeah. Beautiful. I was just reading Evelyn Araluen's The Rot on the Tram Inn. And it's so beautiful. This part, I just have to read it. It's from Instructions on Getting a Gun. And this bit where she says, "Understand it will take everything, forbearance, humility, acts of shared and distributed risk, losing what you thought you needed to survive. It won't feel like it, but one day you'll discover you can miss something without needing it back. Repeat it every night. We will never survive this without each other. What will there be to survive without each other?"
Mm.
What a great way to start the morning.
Yeah. I'm impressed you read this early.
Yeah, that's what I took away from it. I was like, whoa.
Look, I'm less, you know, less interestingly over the weekend because I've moved and my cat is struggling to adjust. So he's like not sleeping through the night and, you know, and then, but then he's been like, but I'm trying to learn from him. He's like, he wants me to cuddle him and he's like clawing my hand. He's like, come and pet me. And then he's like, I'm very anxious. There's a lot of new sounds and noises in this house that's stressing me out. He's like in hypervigilant mode.
Mm.
And I'm like, you know what? People take time to adjust. Cats take time to adjust. You know, I just need to be more cat. So, yeah, that was my weekend. Helping a cat overcome his anxiety of moving to a new place. Nice. So, yeah, I have to read on trams because, yeah. How was your weekend, Juliet?
I love how that came back.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I tried to wrap it up,
I had a good weekend. We won our first football game.
Yay!
Yay! Yes. Woo-hoo!
So that was good.
So this was your first game?
It was the second game. Yeah, we lost the first
game. We lost the first game. We booed the other team last week.
What's it like getting back on the field?
It's going okay. I feel like I'm playing in a new position, but then on the weekend we didn't have enough. The other team didn't have enough players, so then we had to play to a reduced number on the field. So that was then my position was not needed, so then I had to like jump around and do a lot of different things.
Free agent, I like
free
it.
Free agent,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, a woman of many talents.
So that was what I was trying to do. But yes, that was my Saturday, and then I didn't work yesterday, which was nice. I went on a little hike.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Today, yesterday's weather was quite nice, wasn't it?
The weekend was amazing.
It was sunny, right? Yeah, it was beautiful. It was quite warm. I remember. Yeah, it was warm. I was wearing thongs on Sunday.
Really?
Yeah, look at me, thongs in April.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I would go that far, but
I did wear my sandals on Saturday.
Oh my
afternoon.
God. Yeah. Am I seeing the right thing?
Like, yeah, no, no, no.
Oh my God. Okay, because I'm like,
Singapore. No, I'm just saying
Australia.
Get the word wrong.
I'm just more like, I don't think
you're still covering
that.
Your toes. Is what you're saying. Yeah, okay, fair.
I probably wear socks with sandals or something.
Yeah, well, that's what I like to do. But then some days I'm like, I can't do that. It's too dorky. But
nah, embrace.
Yeah exactly. Embrace you get it. To an age where there is no such thing as too dorky. Mm. Love the cringe.
Sorry to cut this conversation short, but we should probably tell our listeners what's coming up on today's show. It is a very big show today. So starting off at 7:15, we'll be joined by Marie Pardee, who we've spoken to before, and we'll be chatting to her about the Maribyrnong Council's new not security welcome crew that will be operating in Footscray. So Marie will be telling us more about that and what that actually means for people in Footscray. At 7:30, we'll be joined by Emma from Free Kanaki Solidarity NAM, who will be speaking about the recent arrival of a delegation of feminists from Kanaki, as well as some events that they'll be at in NAM, but also Maganjin and also Mulubimba.
At 7:45.
At 7:45. Oh, sorry. Yes, we're going to be speaking to Bella from Stop the Demo, and we're going to be talking about a few things, including how their coalition started and their upcoming screening of Bay Views for All, which is a documentary about the housing towers. And finally, we'll also talk about the upcoming rally to save public housing taking place at the end of the month.
Nice. And at 8 o'clock, we'll be speaking to Sunday from Anak Bayang in Melbourne, who will share more about the massacre that took place in Toboso Negros Occidental in the Philippines on April 19th, as well as the community vigil that will be held tonight at the State Library of Victoria.
And then at 8:15, we're going to chat to Yolanda Robson, who's director of the Young Workers Centre at Trades Hall. We're going to be speaking about some recent changes to the junior wages with announcements from the retail, fast food and pharmacy industries. And Yolanda's going to help us break down what these changes actually mean. And we're also going to talk about the Young Workers Centre's current survey regarding rentals and their union networking event taking place tonight.
Yeah, so a massive show, so stay Absolutely. Tuned. And we'll be back with the news headlines in just a moment.
Some folks know about it, some don't.
These are the news headlines for Tuesday, 28th of April, 2026. April 13th marked a landslide defeat for Hungary's neo-fascist president, Viktor Orban. This signifies a defeat for the far right on a global scale, not for the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, as well as Donald Trump, who was openly a supporter of Orban. Despite the defeat, the winning candidate, Peter Maigar, is not leftist and appears to be in support of the genocidal Israeli leader, Benjamin Netanyahu, and upholds promises to maintain anti-immigration laws. Still, Orban's neo-fascist vision for Hungary included right-wing attacks against immigration, feminism, queer communities, as well as independent media and universities. He was orchestrating moves towards an affinity with Putin's Russia and maintained hostility towards Ukraine. Orban's step down from parliament marks an end to his 16 years as president. Making headlines, despite 7 months into the so-called ceasefire, Israel continues to restrict entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza. Majid Aslan on April 6th was driving a truck for the United Nations World Health Organization when the Israeli army killed him in Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. Aslan was a driver transporting injured Palestinian patients to Egypt and other countries. The convoy had coordinated a permit from the Israeli army to move as per protocol. 37 international aid organizations have been banned both in Gaza and the West Bank by Israel. Hamouda Hussar, 43, has stated that many community kitchens known as tekiya, which have served in the face of war, preventing famine in Gaza, have been restricted since these bans. He states that Israel has deliberately targeted farmers, factories, and people who plant their lands.
In other news, Health Minister Mark Butler announced drastic cuts to the NDIS, or the National Disability Insurance Scheme, suggesting the change has been made for so-called reform and sustainability. It has been reported by Gabrielle McCutcheon, a disability support coordinator, as the largest rollback of disability rights in a generation, who suggests that the people who pay for it are the same people the scheme was built to protect. There have been headlines of suspicion by government officials who have suggested every participant was a subject of fraudulence and providers were criminals, aiding the public's loss of trust in the scheme. Overall, average plan approvals will drop from approximately $31,000 to $26,000, driven primarily by cuts to community participation funding. McCutcheon further states, Labor needs to stop blaming participants for the failures of the NDIS. It needs to fix the system. Also in the news, calls for platypuses to be recognised as threatened species have been reported by New South Wales-based researchers. They are currently reported as endangered in South Australia and vulnerable in Victoria. Lead researcher of the University of New South Wales Platypus Conservation Initiative, Dr. Gilad Bino, said the species were only hanging on, not thriving, in New South Wales and the Murray-Darling Basin. Unfortunately, there is not enough data in New South Wales to back up the claims that they are near extinction. Further research must be conducted in order to include them within the Environment Protection and Biodiversity Conservation Act of 1999, of which they will mandatorily receive conservation efforts. Nyampa Wailumwun woman Danielle Fleckler, whose family has a deep ancestral connection with the Macquarie Marshes, stated that platypus's populations have disappeared from areas where they once inhabited. There is a request for a five-year research project to collect data from the rivers.
Additionally, Australia has been involved with conversations between the United States about making Australian biometric data accessible to the Department of Homeland Security. This information grab will grant federal law enforcement agencies such as the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, aka ICE, access to identity documents, including fingerprints and facial images, under what will be called an Enhanced Border Security Partnership, or EBSP. This partnership will be demanded by the US government of all countries participating in the US visa waiver program. New data gathered by Crikey through their Freedom of Information request contains 80 pages of internal documents relating to the EBSP. 48 of these pages have been completely redacted. However, it is confirmed that the amount of data that will be made available to the United States Department of Homeland Security is much greater than initially anticipated. People whose data would be targeted by the US includes anyone who has visited Australia or has a visa to enter Australia, or any other kind of connection to Australia, including holding an Australian passport, even if that individual lives overseas. It also confirms that this will not be confined to biometric data linked to criminal records, but all available biometric data involving things such as voice and iris recognition. Finally, in the headlines, a nationwide research project led by Curtin University has delivered a framework for how species and ecosystems of deep cultural importance to Indigenous Australians can be recognised in environmental policy and conservation. This project explored the concept of culturally significant entities, which are animals, plants, and ecological communities that are indispensable to cultural identity, knowledge systems, and the health of country. The study, guided by Professor Stephen Van Leeuwen and Dr. Tegan Shields, establishes a nationally consistent definition of CSE and sets out a pathway to include Indigenous knowledge and governance into land and sea management. Despite strong cultural importance, culturally significant entities are not recognised in the same systemic way as threatened species under legislation, Dr. Shields said. The project's findings call for a shift in how governments engage with Indigenous Australians, from viewing them as stakeholders to recognising them as right shoulders with cultural authority and responsibilities for country. Those involved in the project identified urgent actions, including rooting Indigenous knowledge in environmental planning, creating Indigenous knowledge and science teams within agencies, making Indigenous representation in environmental decision-making mandatory, and redesigning monitoring and funding systems to include Indigenous-led biocultural measures. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 28th of April, 2026. You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings. Cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
The fuel crisis is putting growing pressure on our services and the people who rely on them. As prices for staples like oil and flour soar, donations are dropping, but the demand is rising. For thousands of refugee families with no government support, the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre is the only safety net left. Please donate today at asrc.org.au. Together, we keep the safety net strong. The Asylum Seeker Resource Centre is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast on 855 AM, 3CR Digital and online at 3cr.org.au. In the news headlines last week, we reported on an update to the Maribyrnong Council's controversial security program in Footscray. This morning, we welcome back Marie Pardy to the program to speak on the council having voted in favour of the not security welcome crew. Marie Pardy was the lead author of a report by Footscray Community Response, which evaluated Maribyrnong Council's use of security patrols to address social and health issues. Welcome to 3CR, Marie.
Thanks, Fung.
So as I said just now, last week in the news headlines, we talked about what was then going to be the upcoming council meeting that was to take place on Tuesday evening to talk about their proposed civic presence in Footscray. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about what this shift to a more civic presence means.
At this stage, we're waiting to see what it looks like. So, but on paper, the model is very interesting in the sense that the council has really voiced its move away from a security-led approach, and it's replaced that wording with a community and presence-led approach. They're talking about it as a place-making approach. So having some recognition of the value of the place and the spirit of the place, in the sense that it's Footscray should be a place that welcomes everybody. So the language of it is really encouraging. We were quite surprised by the wording. Mm. But at some level, we really think that this is a great win for Footscray Community Response and all of those who have tried to point out to council that a security approach to people in public place is inappropriate and also ineffective. And as we saw, as articulated in our report, as we saw, it actually exacerbated conflict and harm at particular stages. So we welcome the shift away from security. And it's interesting to note that council was very clear about it not being a security model and moving, you know, definitely moving away from that model. Having said that, we are really a little bit unclear about what the model will look like in practice. So what they say is that there will be two. It's called a welcome crew. I quite appreciate it, actually. I think it might have been Yu Fong has said before, the not security welcome crew, which in a way, that sort of made me smile because I thought, yeah, it is a not security welcome crew, but which sort of indicated to me that security was somewhere still in the minds of those who have created this new model. But it's still talking about people in public place as if they are a problem and how we deal with them. Now, that's a kind of worrying starting point for us, that they're thinking about having two community workers. One position will be responsible for liaising with traders, and the other will be responsible for linking people in public space to services. So, and then the added emphasis is to prevent escalation of any problems before they occur. So it's a kind of interesting framework, one that we think has possibility, but it also, there are some perils, I think, with the model. And I guess we just have to wait and see. There was one worrying episode yesterday. I did hear, actually, on the ABC, a discussion by the mayor, who was actually very proud of it, and the move away from security, which we support and welcome. But he then went on to talk about their very close relationship with police and that the police would be spending more time in public. So our work is very far from over, and I think that the community in Footscray have done an amazing job really trying to convince council that there are better ways to work around public safety, there are better ways to work around the public well-being of marginalised people who occupy public space as a way of creating some safety and comfort for themselves. So we're at a really interesting stage. The model now is open for consultation, and really council just asking a few basic questions about, you know, what people think of this approach, and is there anything they really want to say. So it will be voted on formally in June and go into operation, or actually start operating in July. One thing we're also concerned about is that we don't believe that some of the more vocal traders will be happy with this model, and which is not to say that all the traders will be unhappy with it, but we do believe that council will come under significant pressure from some of the more vociferous councillor traders to reinstate or to, not to reinstate security, I think council probably won't do that, but to increase a more sort of model of, I don't know, surveillance or policing. It's just not clear actually what the community welcome crew will be doing. But let's just see. The devil will be in the detail.
Yeah, there's like you said, there are some wins there, and on paper it sounds like it could be something quite positive for the community, but there's a lot that's left unsaid. And I know that Footscray Community Response is perhaps anticipating vendors and local traders to start organising, especially if for those who are perhaps unhappy with this shift to a more civic presence. And so, yeah, I know that there are calls to the public to give their opinion and contribute to the consultation process. And I guess, yeah, we can't celebrate too soon, like you said, Marie, because...
No, I think it's a great win for the community, though. Like, I do think the community has convinced councillors, well, particular councillors, that this approach is really not helping anybody. But I do think, though, that it seems that they still see the people who they occupying public space as the main problem. So until there's a greater appreciation, I think, of those people's right to occupy public space and the right for them to feel safe and well, as well as the right for everyone else to feel that. I think somehow that's the nub of the problem. Like, I think we've got to stop seeing these people as a problem to be addressed, as a problem to be removed. I mean, the whole idea of linking them to services is great, but if that means that, hopefully that means they'll be, their presence will be no longer there or they'll disappear, that's the problem. And if the community worker that is, or the welcome crew member that is working with businesses is fielding complaints all the time about the ugliness or the ugly presence of these people, I think we're still in the same boat. But look, we're one step closer to us actually monitoring something and hopefully building some relationships with this welcome crew and trying to, you know, just see what we can all do to ensure that everyone who occupies public space can do so in a way which is safe and meaningful for them.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Marie, and I think that's something to think about as well. Unfortunately, we're out of time this morning, but thank you so much for joining us on the program to give us an update. I'm sure we'll be speaking to you and others as part of Footscray Community Response in the next few months as consultation wraps up and the council goes to vote on this formally. But thank you again for joining us this morning,
thanks,
Marie.
Thanks.
We've been speaking to Marie Pardy about the Maribyrnong Council's decision to adopt a civic presence in Footscray. If you'd like to keep up to date with what's happening there or find links to the consultation run by the council, you can follow Footscray Community on Instagram. We're going to go to a song now. This is by Tiana Kasi, who is a future soul R&B artist based in Nam, whose Indian and Samoan heritage were both honoured in her 2019 EP, Meghalaya. The song we're playing today, though, was released in 2024, and it's called Good As It Gets.
I'm lucky and I'm clever. Sinner and a saint, poured in equal measure. I'm trashy and I'm treasured. Calling in the power, calling in the pleasure. You know I always win. I share it with my kin. I let you kiss the ring. I'm as good as it gets. I go to pull the trigger, but it is already done. Time to crown the winner, but I have already won. I'm sure you'd love to see me again. I've been wanting to have that effect. If I were you, I'd be as obsessed. I'm as good as it gets. I'm the baddest, I'm the best. Put your man's word to the test. I'm an inspo to the rest. You a fan first, don't forget. Yeah, without saying a word, you've been told. I'm dealing all the hands while you fold. I gift you with my presence, behold it, you're welcome. I'm as good as it gets. I go to pull the trigger, but it is already done. Time to crown the winner, but I have already won. I'm sure you'd love to see me again. I've been wanting to have that effect. If I were you, I'd be as obsessed. I'm as good as it gets. Were you, I'd be as obsessed with me too. And if I were you, I'd be as obsessed. I'm as good.
You're listening to 3CR, and that was Tiana Kasi with her song Good As It Gets. We are joined now by Emma from Free Kanaki Solidarity NAM, who will be speaking about the recent arrival of a delegation of feminists from Kanaki and the various events that will take place in NAM, as well as Maganjin, so-called Brisbane, and Mulumbimba, so-called Newcastle. Welcome to 3CR, Emma.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us on the show. This is an exciting couple of weeks as we welcome some people from Kanaki to so-called Australia. Can you just remind our listeners the purpose of this visit?
Absolutely. So for those who may not be familiar with Kanaki, Kanaki is the Kanak or Indigenous term for New Caledonia, which is just a stone throws away to our east. And is currently under the occupation of the French state. So the purpose of this visit is really to highlight a decolonial feminist perspective on that ongoing French settler occupation of the country.
Mm. Thanks for that, Emma. And, yeah, a good reminder that there are so many places so close to our continent where there are Indigenous people fighting every day for sovereignty and for justice and freedom. And I was explaining to the breakfast crew this morning that I was at Camp Sovereignty on the weekend and saw a few of the women there who spoke, which was really lovely, as well as people from West Papua as well. So, yeah, that will be really exciting. In terms of some of the events that are coming up in NAM, I know that on Thursday there is a meeting for First Nations feminists from the Pacific here in NAM. So,
that's right.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could talk to that in a bit more detail.
Yeah, so that particular meeting is intended for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women and also Pacifica women who may be living here. There's also a major conference happening in town at the moment called Women Deliver. So we've invited Pacifica and Indigenous attendees there to come along as well. So that's the first thing that's kind of kicking off a bit of a whirlwind tour across the East Coast.
Mm. Yeah, and what are you hoping will take place at this meeting? Like, I imagine that there are a lot of connections that can be made, similarities in the struggles between different countries.
Yeah, for sure. It's very much trying to tie together all these different links across the Pacific. I think there's, anyway, multiple factors at play, partially thanks to colonisation. A major one is simply just the language barrier. Of course, New Caledonia / Kanaki is Francophone, and obviously there is a lot of Pacifica nations that are Anglophone, and we're really trying to take this opportunity of everyone all being in town at the same time to bring people together, establish a discussion group, and that way we can strengthen bonds instead of keeping to our separate little silos.
Mm, yeah, and that was something that I observed at Camp Sovereignty on Saturday, was listening to, for example, Uncle Robbie speak and Tony Birch speak, Yaren speak, but then also the messages from people from West Papua and also Kanaki, that a lot of the stories were very similar in terms of ongoing impacts of colonization, but also militarization, across these Indigenous lands. On Friday, that's May 1st, which is International Workers' Day. So I was wondering, or May Day, there's a big event there, and I know that Free Kanaki has just released the list of speakers that will be at this event. Yeah. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so Friday, 1st of May, we have our Decolonial Conversation speaker panel. So we're hosting that with Black People's Union Crime Scene Australia. So we're inviting people to come along to that. There are tiered ticket prices available for that, and that's at the University of Melbourne at 2 p.m. So that's going to be a really big one. We've got, yes, as you just said, a big lineup of speakers that we've just released. We've got a really, really good crowd there with, yeah, I think some amazing knowledge, and each will bring their own perspectives of decolonial feminism, in the Pacific as well as Kanaki itself.
Mm. And then I think on the 2nd of May as well, there's another event happening in NAM, is that right?
Yes, that's right. So that panel is on Western imperialism in the Pacific. So that one's at Balam Balam, which is in Brunswick.
And for any anyone listening who is sort of interested or but doesn't really know much about Kanaki, the history of Kanaki, or the ongoing influence of the French settler colony, why would it be important for people in so-called Australia to attend these events?
I think fundamentally it's the question of solidarity between struggles. I think, you know, as you've already said, there are huge parallels in the processes of colonisation, obviously not one-to-one the same, but we can definitely see patterns in the way that settler colonialism has happened in Kanaki compared to here. And there is really, I think, a massive opportunity here to strengthen those bonds, particularly between Indigenous people on this continent and Indigenous people across the Pacifica. But also there's just not much knowledge about what's been happening in Kanaki recently, the history of that country. And so we're kind of using this opportunity as a kind of educational moment as well as a kind of networking moment too.
Yeah, I feel like there was a moment a couple of years ago during the uprising where we were hearing, I think, more from Kanaki, but it seems to... I don't think it's being talked about as much. And so I guess, Emma, to reiterate your point, it is important to keep that conversation going because they are still struggling against that colonial power in Kanaki there. Where can people find out more information about what's happening, not just in Naam, but if we've got listeners in Maganjin and in Moolambimba as well?
Yeah, 100%. So for Naam events, the best place to go is our Instagram. So we are freekanakisolidarity.naam. For Maganjin, it's Treaty Before Sports, one word. And for Moolambimba, it's Conversations for Palestine, that account.
And I know that there are ongoing fundraisers that are happening for Kanaki. Is there any way that listeners can support the people on the ground in Kanaki?
Yeah, absolutely. So a component of this speaking tour as well as a fundraising component, the idea is that we can send back money with the delegation so they can bring that back to their country. Obviously, they're dealing with things like there's mass unemployment amongst communities, the sheer price of medication and basic everyday items. So we do have a trust link in our bio, but also even just purchasing a ticket can really help out a lot.
Well, thank you so much for that, Emma. There are so many events coming up and they all look so incredible with some incredible speakers as well. Make sure you get down to one of them and follow them on Instagram for more information. But for now, Emma, thanks so much for chatting with us this morning.
Yeah, it's an excellent opportunity. Highly recommend going. Thank you so much.
That was Emma from Free Kanaki Solidarity Naam speaking about a visit by the Kanak delegation and the events coming up in the next couple of weeks. We will be reminding listeners about those events at the end of our show. But for more information, you can go to freekanakisolidarity.naam on Instagram. We'll be back with the track in just a couple of messages.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be.
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire.
Play-based, culturally safe early learning is available in Victoria and sets our kids up for life. That's why Koori Kids can access 15 hours of funded 3-year-old kindergarten a week. And to give our kids even more opportunities to socialise and learn through play, from 2026, 4-year-old kindergarten hours will increase up to 25 hours a week. Together, we can give our Koori Kids the best start. Search Koori Kids Shine to learn more. Authorised by the Victorian Government, Melbourne.
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM 3CR Digital and 3cr.org.au. We're going to play a song now. This next track is actually part song, part chant. It's by a Kanak storyteller. Her name is Marie-Angèle Medouya, and it's called Didi Ololoi Ololoa.
Tobo na na yawe to dandindi manjame. Dandindi manjame, maru tome maru panda. Maru tome maru panda, maru buri lokon. Maru buri lokon, jaja aja ilo one day. Jaja ilo one day, ibe kuwe ngoa. Ibe kuwe ngoa, ibe yoyu wewe. Ibe yoyu wewe, yoyu ngoro una. Yoyu ngoro una, ao nambwe nyambikon. Ao nambwe nyambikon, nambwe panaturakon. Ololoi, ololoa, ololoi, ololoa, ololoi, ololoa. Tombo na nimbo, tombo na na njawe, tunda ndindi manjame, marutome, marupanda. Marutome, marupanda, marumbwari lakon. Ololoi, ololoa, ololoi, ololoa. Marumbari lakon, jaja jaja ilo wande, ibe kuwe ngowa, ibe jaju kwewe, jaju ngoro una. Ololoi, ololoa, ololoi, ololoa, ololoi, ololoa.
They're eyeing off an estate which is in perfectly good condition. It just happens to have bay views and a lot of open space.
Bay Views for All is a new documentary that reveals the human cost of the Victorian government's public housing redevelopment project. The film documents residents of the Barrack Beacon public housing estate as they fight to save their homes and community. Bay Views for All is available for community members, public housing advocates and organisations to screen, intending to spark conversations, raise funds and educate audiences on the importance of public housing. To organise a screening, email barrackbeacon@gmail.com. That's BARACBEACON @gmail.com.
Save public housing! Stop the demolition!
A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and up next we're speaking to Bella, who is a member of Stop the Demo, which is a grassroots coalition of workers fighting to stop the demolition of the 44 public housing towers here in Naarm. And Bella joins us today to share how the coalition came together and how she got involved in the group. We're also going to discuss how Stop the Demo is working to challenge misconceptions about public housing and also about the renewal project. And finally, we'll chat about the screening for Bay Views for All, which is taking place next month, as well as the rally to save public housing. Welcome to Tuesday Breakfast, Bella.
Thank you so much, Juliet.
Yeah, I really appreciate you getting up early and coming on this morning. It is early. But to start off, could you tell us a little bit about the organisation Stop the Demo and how you got involved?
Yeah, totally. So as you said, Stop the Demo is a grassroots coalition of workers from across the social and community services. Initially, primarily, it was a lot of people working in the housing and homelessness sector. The group came together over a collective outrage following the 2023 announcement by the Vic government of its plans to demolish the 44 public housing towers across Naarm. And, I guess the stated plans of rebuilding the sites with a mix of private and community housing were cause of great anger and concern to me and my fellow workers in the sector, who are acutely aware that Victoria has one of the lowest investments in public housing per capita in Australia and a really rapidly growing waitlist and demand for public housing. Initially, we were sort of focused on encouraging our employees in the sector to speak up to Homes Victoria and tell them that these plans would destroy communities and further perpetuate people's experiences of homelessness. However, quite sadly, we've seen a real lack of leadership and courage from our sector, and instead a lot of our activism has been emboldened by joining in with the movement of groups opposing the demolitions. There's so many groups taking action, so standing in solidarity with them has been really important, particularly with groups that are most primarily affected by these plans. We've been able to collaborate with groups such as 44 Flats United, Save Public Housing Collective, Rahu, Renters and Housing Union, Honk for Housing and others out there, and collaborating on rallies and screenings and picketing and speaking at the parliamentary inquiry into these demolitions. I personally got involved because the demolitions kind of fly in the face of everything we know about sustaining healthy communities and prioritising self-determination and ending homelessness. I've been really fortunate to work in a program that drew from some evidence-based approaches to ending homelessness, which is Housing First, a Housing First system or a Housing First approach. And this approach relies on a really good supply of public housing. This approach also draws upon principles that should be central in our housing and in our service system more broadly, but aren't. So principles such as everyone has a right to a home, that people should have a say over where they live and what that looks like, and if they've experienced the trauma of homelessness and rough sleeping, that they be offered support on their terms from peer practitioners and other workers. So that's a little bit about the group.
Yeah, thank you so much for, sort of talking us through how it got started. And I think... given everything you've said about, kind of the rate of or the investment that Victoria's putting into building housing, it just seems, to be totally counterintuitive that then they're going to tear down the existing housing. Would you be able to talk us through, how are communities going to be impacted by the demolition?
So I guess contextually when I think about this issue, I also think about the timing in that the Victorian government have just entered into treaty with First Peoples. So the decision to demolish public housing, it really impacts Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples in Victoria, and the lack of consultation there is really highly concerning. You know, I'm thinking about sitting here in this studio at 3CR with you and how we're not very far from Gertrude Street and the Stolen Generations Market at Atherton Gardens and that beautiful statue of Uncle Archie Roach and Auntie Ruby. And so what is to become of these culturally significant places and landscapes on public housing estates if the demolition goes ahead, I suppose? I'm thinking of that community and wanting to stand in solidarity with that community. And I guess we also know that the demolition will directly impact 10,000 people across the 44 towers and disrupt and dislocate people who have lived in community together for decades. Everything we're hearing from people we directly work with and from residents organising in the towers is that communication about these plans from Homes Victoria, the government agency who are evicting people from their homes, has also been incredibly confusing, not delivered in people's languages, and highly disorientating. The other thing to keep in mind in terms of communities affected by this is that the latest tranche of high-rises that have been announced in February is facing demolition are 7 high-rises that are home to older folk, so over 55 people across inner metro Melbourne. And older people's high-rise buildings are kind of hives of activity and community. They're often common spaces at the ground floor that are used by community groups to share meals. There's often community gardens that residents have created. There's also a long-standing older person's high-rise program that positions a worker in these buildings to provide support to isolated residents if they'd like to engage in that. All of this will obviously be lost if demolitions are not fiercely opposed and stopped. And I think it's also important to note that public housing and the plans to potentially demolish public housing impact the entire community, right? We're in a housing crisis, as you said. We need a healthy supply of public housing in order to get ourselves out of this housing crisis.
You've raised so many really important points, and I think definitely that idea of this being a whole of community-wide impact is really important to think about as well. Of course, there's a lot of different debates in the media about public housing and about the demolition as well. So could you talk us through, yeah, what are some of the common misconceptions about those public housing renewal projects?
Totally. So I think the average person can maybe listen to the press release from the government and think that these demolitions represent a net increase to public or social housing, but the numbers and the language here are quite sneaky and deceptive. So it's important we know that social housing, it's an umbrella term, right? So it encompasses public housing and community housing. And while the government say that demolitions and redevelopment will mean an increase of social housing by 10% by 2050, none of that, it seems, is going to be public housing. It's going to be community housing and private housing on what was once public land, right? So community housing is run for not-for-profits. It's quite different to public housing. Rent is higher. So in community housing, you're charged generally 30% of your income and the entirety of your Centrelink rent assistance. And in public housing, you charge 25% of your income. So on a limited Centrelink income, the leap to 30 can really put households under financial stress. Community housing also comes with service fees and charges. And the other thing that people that are working with Stop the Demo, so people working in community with other people, are seeing that community housing providers often tend to cherry pick who they offer housing to, favouring those on higher Centrelink payments such as DSP over JobSeeker, and also those with so-called low support needs. Community housing providers tend to ask quite invasive questions and a level of detail about people's mental health and substance use that I wouldn't be expected to disclose to my landlord as a renter. It isn't necessarily founded on the basis that housing is an inherent human right. It kind of, unfortunately, plays into harmful narratives that people have to present in a perfect sort of way to earn or deserve housing, which, yeah, is just very concerning. In terms of misconceptions as well, there's not a lot of transparency coming out of the government, and that's been really highlighted by the class action led by some of the residents and supported by Inner Melbourne Community Legal. So the government don't intend to share any of the documents about this matter, right? They're saying it's cabinet confidence or whatever that language they use. So none of the planning documentation, none of the evaluations, technical assessments, financial modelling, none of this is in the public domain. Like, does it even exist? The lack of transparency is really, really concerning. Yeah. And I think in terms of misconceptions as well and communities impacted, I also don't want to forget that these plans also really severely impact on people that are really doing it tough and sleeping rough and experiencing homelessness right now. We are actively seeing that people are not getting housing offers while people in the towers are being reprioritised and rehoused into other public housing, right? So there's such limited housing stock. And in the meantime, people are living on the streets and it's a life or death issue, right? Homelessness causes preventable death. Mm. So.
Yeah, that's really, really harrowing to think about. And, I guess that idea that it's putting pressure on the existing stock available as well in that transition period. I don't think I'd heard it broken down, those differences between community and social housing, with those numbers was really helpful as well to know, what the difference is. And, those invasive questions as well, that's just wild that people, are asked that to get access to housing, which, should just be, a right. And I know that, you mentioned that you've been working together with other housing groups, groups advocating for public housing to hold some events. And coming up soon is the screening of Bayviews for All on the 12th of May, if you can tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks, Juliet. Yeah, that's right. So we've got a screening on May 12th at Eclipse Cinema in Collingwood. And we are kind of reaching capacity, so do get in quick if you're interested in tickets. And also there are free tickets available to social housing residents, so community and public housing, people experiencing homelessness, and also Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So do take that up. Tickets are on Humanitix, and there's a link in our Stop the Demo Instagram. Or also Bayviews for All have a great website that is a great advocacy piece and a good source for learning more about this issue too. So they've got links to the screening on their website and links to past screenings and links to a lot of the groups involved in this campaigning, this grassroots campaigning.
Awesome. We'll have to check it out. And Also next month is the Rally to Save Public Housing. What are some of the details of the rally and the key demands that it's going to be fighting for?
It's the mass rally to defend and extend public housing, and the demands are in the name there. We need this demolition stopped, and we need an overhaul of the system and a massive investment in our public housing to address the huge wait list and the people that are waiting for housing. And we also need to make sure the housing that people live in is amenable and suits their needs, right? So we need to not let housing get into disrepair. The government needs to invest and provide timely maintenance, right? So the RAS rally to defend and extend public housing is on Saturday the 30th of May at 11 a.m. at the State Library, and it's marching to the Atherton Gardens in Fitzroy. The rally is being organised by a coalition of members of Stop the Demo, 44 Flats United, Save Public Housing Collective, Honks for Housing, Rahu, and there's a Facebook event with more details if you search mass rally to defend and extend public housing.
Yeah, awesome. And finally to wrap up, would you be able to point 3CR listeners to some links that we can go to find out more about Stop the Demo?
Bayviews for All, the film website, has really handy links to a lot of the key groups opposing the demolition of public housing. So I'd encourage you to check out Stop the Demo's Instagram page, F44FU, Save Public Housing Collective, Public Housing Everybody's Business on Facebook. And if you're a community services worker in family violence or housing or mental health and would like to come along to Stop the Demo meetings and get involved in the fight, you can also email us at stopthedemogroup@gmail.com. And I think it's also worth mentioning that these demolitions are also happening at a time of increased policing and harassment of people that are sleeping rough or doing it tough. So it's also really worth following the work and advocacy of the Homeless Persons Union in this space and those other grassroots groups that are standing up against that in Footscray and Port Phillip.
Yeah, definitely. We actually interviewed Marie from Footscray Community Response earlier today.
Awesome.
It all ties together. Thank you so much, Bella, for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking to Bella from Stop the Demo, and we've been talking about, the fight to defend public housing and what the public housing renewal projects actually mean and the negative impacts they're going to have on communities. We also discussed the upcoming Bayviews for All screening on May 12th and the Save Public Housing rally happening at the end of May as well.
Beautiful. And up next, we have a song for you. This is a new release by singer-songwriter Jem Kasar Daly, a Gumnayar Bunjalung woman. Enjoy.
I gotta be honest, cause I haven't been. Man, it's exhausting keeping it in. God only knows it. Complicated. Thought that love would save me, but I need to save myself before I don't recognize myself no more. I gotta speak. Thank you.
if I don't speak now? Am I ever gonna leave? I gotta speak.
You've been listening to Jem Kasar Daly, a Gunnayar Bunjalung woman, with her song Speak Now. Sorry, not very good at speaking at the moment. All right, up next, we will be speaking to Sunday. Sunday is from Anak Bayan, Melbourne, and she will be sharing more about the massacre that took place in Toboso, Negros Occidental in the Philippines on April 19th, as well as the community vigil that will be held at the State Library of Victoria tonight. Sunday is a Filipino youth activist fighting for national democracy in the Philippines against U.S. imperialism. She is the chairperson of Anak Bayan Melbourne, a comprehensive Filipino youth mass organization, as well as the propaganda and campaign officer of Bayan Australia, the coalition of mass organizations under the banner of national democracy. Good morning, Sunday, and welcome to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast.
Good morning, Cesar.
How are you? Yeah, so sorry to be obviously meeting under such horrific circumstances, but yeah, I guess, could you just start by telling us about the events leading up to April 19 and, of course, what happened on April 19th itself?
Yeah, so Negros, the Negros Islands in the Philippines have long been, experiencing a lot of landlessness as well as oppression and exploitation from the big landlords in the Philippines. We can trace this back all the way from Spanish colonization, when feudalism was spread out through the Philippines as a form of subjugating the Filipino people. During Spanish colonization was when the hacienda system was also implemented. So the hacienda system is basically using the land that are earned by a few minority of the Filipinos, usually coming from Spanish heritage. Mm. And they're the ones that are in control of the land, while the native Filipinos during that time were the ones that were tilling the land for export crops. And so since then, Negros has been known to export and till crops such as sugarcane. So sugarcane is not something that is naturally grown in the Philippines. So the sugar plantations are merely for exporting outside of the country. It is not something that is used to sustain the basic needs of the Filipino people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all the way back from Spanish colonization. But even until now, sugarcane is still one of the biggest exports of the Philippines to sustain its economy that is heavily reliant on the United States. So just recently, last 2018, there was also another massacre that happened in Negros Occidental.
Yeah.
So this was called the Sagay 9 massacre, where nine workers,
yeah,
sugarcane workers, were massacred by the military while they were just having their dinner in their tent in the plantation. So these workers were members of the National Federation of Sugar Workers, which is an organization that they started in 1971 to support the landless workers in Negros Occidental. A lot of the people that were killed were the sugar workers themselves, who you know, we're also just new to organizations fighting for their land back. Fighting for the ownership of the land that they are tilling. And then there are also, you know, lawyers who were doing investigations of this massacre that was then killed following the killing of these farmers. And currently, Negros is also one of the regions in the Philippines that is being targeted by big multinational corporations for mining.
Yes, of course.
So there's a lot of there's a lot of land struggle going on in Negros, even previously, before the massacre recently happened.
So, could you share more about, what happened on April 19th and also, who have been killed that we know of? Because I know that's, quite a large number.
Yeah. So, on April 19th, the 79th Infantry Battalion of the Armed Forces of the Philippines, which is the fascist military that the Philippine government and the U.S., government are heavily funding, killed 19 individuals and displaced 653 residents in the peasant communities of Toboso, Negros Occidental. Over the past few days, we've heard, names of the victims, but it came very slowly as well. So the first victim that we found out was RJ Ledesma, who was a community organizer and researcher and journalist in Negros. So he was researching about the conditions of the sugarcane farmers in Negros when he was killed. Alongside him was also Alisa Alano, which was a student counselor in the University of the Philippines, Diliman. And she was, she was also a youth, she was a youth leader and a human rights and peasant advocate as well, who was also immersing herself in the daily lives of the farmers who are experiencing the worst kinds of exploitation and oppression from big landlords and the military. And then on the following days, we also found out about Errol Wendell, who is also a member of a federation of peasant organizations, and also is a cultural worker who as well was immersing himself with the farmers of Toboso. Following that, we also heard of Maureen Santuyo, which is also a an organizer and human rights and peasant advocate who went to Negros as well to immerse herself with the daily struggle of the farmers. And then it just keeps adding up.
I know, because I think, you said 19 so far.
Was 19 individuals. And then we have two foreign nationals, actually. Both of them are Filipino Americans. Who went back to the Philippines to also connect, the displacement that they felt being abroad due to the labor export policy program, which forcibly, which forcibly exports Filipino labor outside of the country because there is no sustaining jobs in the Philippines. And so they were a result of that. And due to that, you know, they found themselves to relate back their identity as Filipinos by going back to the Philippines and as well immersing themselves in the lives of the most exploited and oppressed classes in society.
Absolutely, joining the land struggle,
And
I think, obviously, that was really important, I think, to actually share the names of those who have been killed because I think, bearing witness and saying their names is a very important part of grieving and important part of acknowledging the losses and mourning our martyrs. But In a situation like this, what would justice and accountability actually look like? What are the people calling for?
Yeah. So we're calling for justice and accountability for all the victims of Negros 19.
Yeah.
A lot of them were civilians. The narrative that the Armed Forces of the Philippines and the National Task Force to End Local Communist Conflict, which is a counterinsurgency institution of the government, are propagating that all of the 19 individuals were combatants of the New People's Army. But actually, more of them were civilians, and there were two of them that were just kids.
Yeah.
They were children who died.
Yeah.
So there was no... The whatever the AFP is saying as a fabricated, they're fabricating an encounter to justify the killing of these 19 individuals. It's a desperate attempt on their side, because knowing that the people who came to Negros to research about the conditions of the farmers and live amongst them found it to themselves to. Join their struggle, shows that the crisis in Philippine society is ever more worsening.
Yeah.
And so the real justice and accountability, would come from addressing the demands of the most exploited population in the Philippines, especially the peasantry class, because the Philippines, due to U.S. imperialism, is still dependent on backwards agricultural economy.
Yeah, yeah.
So most of our economy is heavily reliant on the import-export industries. There is no nationalized industries in the Philippines as of now that actually sustains the Filipino people. So despite the Philippines being really rich in agricultural land, these lands are owned by only a few big landlords who are usually the ones in government as well, and who are usually the ones who are in the import-export industries as well, directly benefiting from U.S. imperialist interest in the Philippines. And so the reasons as to why, human rights and peasant advocates and researchers such as the victims of Negros 19 went to the Philippines is because of these very conditions. And so for real justice and accountability to happen for the victims of Negros 19 and all the other massacres that have happened throughout our history, the end of of semi-feudal exploitation in the Philippines has to happen. And for that to happen, U.S. imperialism as well has to be abolished.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, yeah, on that, we don't have much time left, but I did want to ask a very important question, because obviously what's happening is, as you have been saying, part of a broader struggle of the community, the Filipino community, and your organization specifically have been working on this for years. I guess to wrap us up, could you share more with the listeners about Anak Bayan Melbourne and the kind of work that you guys do? And I guess, yeah, if they want to get involved, how can they do that?
Yeah. So Anak Bayan Melbourne is a Filipino youth mass organization where we started from the Philippines, and due to the fact that Filipinos are spread out outside of the country as well, there was need for organizations such as Anak Bayan to exist as well. And so Anak Bayan is fighting for national democracy with a socialist perspective in the Philippines, continuing the long lineage of struggle and resistance from oppression and exploitation. The Filipino youth is at the forefront of the struggle as well, as the Filipino youth have a future to win. And therefore, they're more keen on transforming as well as the society that they are living in. So most of the work that we do is giving educational discussions on the concrete conditions of Philippine society and the revolution that is happening in the Philippines before and at the moment. As of now, we are also gathering for a community vigil later today at 6 p.m. in front of State Library to mourn and honor the victims of the Toboso or the Negros massacre that just happened recently.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sunday, for joining us. And like I said at the start, under incredibly horrific circumstances, but I think it's so important that we keep talking about these things and bringing it to the forefront of everybody's attention because, you know, yeah, these are the issues that are faced by people in our community in the diaspora. So yeah. Thank you so much, Sunday, and I look forward to chatting with you again, hopefully under much better circumstances.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We've been speaking to Sunday from Anak Bayan, Melbourne, who shared about the massacre that took place in Toboso, Negros Occidental on April 19th in the Philippines, and as well as the community vigil that will be held at the State Library of Victoria tonight at 6 p.m. For more information, listeners are encouraged to follow at Anak Bayan Melbourne on Instagram for more details on the work they do and as well as the vigil tonight. We have a couple of messages coming up for you. This is 3CR Tuesday Breakfast.
The law is part of our everyday lives, including when we buy something, use a service, have a job, or rent a house. The law can be used to help protect and support families when there is violence in the home or disputes over parenting arrangements. Sometimes we might need to understand the law to navigate specific government systems like Centrelink, getting a residency visa, or if we come into contact with the police. Community legal centres provide free, quality legal advice and assistance to help people with everyday legal problems. We focus on working with people who are experiencing disadvantage, such as financial hardship, family violence, homelessness, and discrimination. Community legal centres are independent, non-government organisations and can be found across Victoria and Australia. If you're experiencing a legal problem, your local community legal centre may be able to help. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres Victoria at www.fclc.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and up next we're chatting to Yolanda Robson, who's Director of the Young Workers Centre at Trades Hall. Recently, the retail, fast food and pharmacy industries announced changes to junior wages. Yolanda joins us today to discuss updates to their campaign to end junior wages and what these recent announcements tangibly mean for young workers. We'll also chat about the Young Workers Centre's survey regarding rentals and their union networking event taking place tonight. Welcome back to Tuesday Breakfast, Yolanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for making time to come on to chat. To start off with, I know, yeah, we've spoken previously about the Young Workers Centre's campaign to end junior wages, but for those who might not know much about what that means, could you give us a quick rundown on what junior wages are and how they affect young workers?
Yeah, for sure. So in Australia, our current workplace laws allow employers to pay a lower minimum wage to young workers and apprentices simply because of their age. What we know is that young workers, through these laws, lose around $3 billion every year. And much of that $3 billion figure is going straight into large corporations' pockets and profits, where the majority of young Australians affected by junior wages, where they work. In parallel to this, research is also showing us, and I don't think we really need research because we're living it every day, but in 2025, 85% of young Australians report experiencing financial difficulties, with over half skipping meals or eating less. So for us, the through line is really clear, and with junior wages, the ask is really simple. If you're doing the same job as the person alongside you, you deserve the same pay, irrespective of your age.
Yeah, definitely. And, that's such a really concerning statistic to think about. Yeah, half of young people skipping meals because they simply can't afford it. And, it really seems like, that people earning equal wages could be a step in the right direction to help people, you know, be actually able to survive in these difficult times. And I know, recently, we've had the retail, fast food and pharmacy industries announce changes to junior wages. Could you, talk us through what these changes are and how they're actually going to impact young workers?
Yeah, sure. So First of all, I want to congratulate the SDA and all the young workers who advocated for themselves during this Fair Work Commission hearing, which spanned over, gosh, nearly a year. But basically, the Fair Work Commission, who sort of oversees all our industries and all our wages in said industries, they made the ruling that if you're between the ages of 18 and 20, so currently being affected by junior wages, if you're between 18 and 20 and working in retail, fast food, or within a pharmacy, your wage after a certain period of time will sort of tick over into the adult, whatever the adult rate is within that award or organisation. So the change itself, it's a little bit finicky to navigate. One thing to note is that if you're considering that maybe you'll be positively affected by this change, you have to work at the same organisation for 6 months or more. Only then will you be paid 100% of the adult rate. It's also they're not sort of implementing this change immediately, so it will be phased over the next 4 years, with the sort of the first implementation commencing at the end of this year.
Mm. And you said that it's once they've worked there for 6 months. Does that happen automatically, or does the worker have to like apply to be bumped up to the 100% wage?
Sure. Yeah, great question. Look, at this point in time, those details aren't clear. We would certainly be advocating for, lower barrier to entry in terms of, accessing and receiving the wages that you're entitled to. At this point in time, it's not super clear to us how that's going to work.
Yeah, no worries. Well, it sounds like there's still quite a few details to be ironed out. Maybe given that, what's next in your campaign to be advocating for young workers when it comes to junior wages?
Yeah, absolutely. So within the Young Workers Centre Junior Wages campaign, we have a particular focus on, one, the ask is abolish junior rates in every single award and for every single age. The Fair Work Commission didn't touch on either of those things. So if you're 16 or 17, you're still going to be heavily affected by junior rates and earning as little as 50 or 60% of what the adult rate is. And for apprentices, in this country, they can earn as little as $12 an hour. And what that means, what that really translates to, is that you've got people who are working and looking at the next 4 years of poor wages.
Mm.
And what that translates to is apprenticeships are becoming a luxury in this country. People are making the sort of, very fair decision of, if for whatever reason they can't live at home, or if they have additional caring responsibilities, they're having to make the choice between, okay, do I earn $15 an hour for the next 4 years and hope that it pays off once I'm fully qualified, or do I go and accept a labouring job where I can earn $30, $35 right now? But the prospect for my wage increasing, we'll figure that out later, but we know that the ceiling sort of taps there. If we want people to acquire the skills that keeps the lights on and keeps building houses and keeping this country moving, then we really need to pay them appropriately.
Mm.
And for many apprentices, the juice is just not worth the squeeze.
A really big decision that young people are facing, and it really seems like pursuing further study and upskilling by doing an apprenticeship for many people can just feel out of reach given these low wages for young people. And I know that the Young Workers Centre is also running a survey about rentals. Can you tell us a little bit about this survey and why people should fill it out?
Yeah, for sure. So in Victoria and in all other states and jurisdictions, but it would sort of vary a little bit, we have what's called minimum rental standards. We're probably all familiar with what they are, or hopefully familiar with what they are, but if you're a renter, it's probably not through lived experience. What we know is that landlords and, you know, property managers, they're not keeping rental properties up to what those current minimum standards are. So, you know, responding in an appropriately timely fashion to when there's an emergency repair, or ensuring that the house is safe and comfortable for renters to live in. There's some positive news happening that on 1st of March next year in Victoria, those rental minimum standards will seek to be improved, which includes expected landlords to put in insulation, expecting landlords to make sure that the house is comfortable with air conditioning for when it gets, you know, bloody 40 degrees or, you know, those days where you wake up and you can see your breath in the morning. But what we know is that landlords aren't keeping up with the current standards. So if we want to make sure that the houses we're renting and living in are comfortable, we're really seeking people's lived experience through this survey so that we can advocate for better enforcement and better oversight of rented properties. Because as we all know as renters, it's literally just not happening.
No, it's certainly not. And I know that's been my experience too. So perhaps I'll have to fill out that survey as well.
Please do. Yeah. Yes, get a little thank you card.
Yeah, amazing. And just, for our final question, can you tell us about the union networking event that you've got on tonight and, where listeners can go to find out more about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we run these a couple of nights a year, and it's really for anyone with an interest or passion in learning about the union movement and how collective action works on the ground and what that looks like. It's happening tonight at 5:30. We'll have food, we'll have drinks, we'll have a bunch of really staunch unionists working across the movement in all different industries and all different roles. Coming in and looking forward to having a chat with people who want to know more about what it's like to work in the movement or learn how to sort of, get involved beyond just paying your dues.
Totally. Well, thank you so much, Yolanda, for joining us today and, really appreciate all your insights.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Well, we've been speaking to Yolanda Robson about ending junior wages, the Centre's rental survey and tonight's union networking event.
And so tonight there's quite a few things happening. Obviously, there's a community vigil at the State Library of Victoria at 6 p.m. mourning the Negros 19 who were massacred in the Philippines, and the Youth Workers Centre Union networking event, as mentioned earlier, that's at the Victorian Trades Hall Council tonight at 5:30. This Thursday, the 30th of April, we have the Decolonial Feminist Meeting for First Nations Women and the Pacific. This is organised by Free Kanaki Solidarity NAM, which we just heard from earlier. This is from 5 to 9 at the community at the Docklands. On Friday, the 1st of May, Decolonial Conversations by Free Kanaki Solidarity, Black People's Union and Crimes in Australia. This is at 2 p.m. in the Kwong Li Dao Building at the University of Melbourne. And then Saturday, 2nd of May, Western Imperialism in the Pacific, again by Free Kanaki Solidarity NAM. This is an incredible event. I highly recommend everybody show up. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. this Saturday at Balam Balam Place in Brunswick. And that's all we have for today. We began this morning at 7:15 with Marie Pardy from the Footscray Community Response speaking about the updates to the Maribyrnong Council's controversial security program in Footscray, followed by a chat with Emma from Free Kanaki Solidarity NAM, who shared about the recent arrival of a delegation of feminists from Kanaki.
Then we spoke to Bella from Stop the Demo about the movement to protect public housing in Victoria and their upcoming film screening and rally next month.
And then at 8 p.m. we spoke to Sunday from Anak Bayan Melbourne, who shared about the massacre that took place in the Philippines on April 19th.
And finally, we spoke to Yolanda Robson from Young Workers Centre about changes to junior wages.
So, I hope you've enjoyed today's show. We'll chat with you next week. Up next is Accent of Women.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.